much for the introduction. So hopefully you'll be kind in passing judgment on this day. So basically, the story that I want to tell you about is, first of all, three likely correlated excesses that CMS has seen in three different searches. I'll then introduce a model that can fit all the different these three different excesses fairly easily, and then I'll talk a little bit about where this is all going. What predictions can we make, and what future directions there are. So. Right off the bat, I just want to introduce the three searches that I'm going to be talking about. So CMS is seeing excesses in these three searches. The first one is pair-produced leptoquarks going to EJ, each of them going to EJ. The second one is a similar thing with one of the leptoquarks going to EJ and one of them going to NuJ. And then there's a third one, which is a W prime resonance search. So I should say that these are, when I say leptoquarks and W prime, W right, I really mean that's what the search is looking for. That's not necessarily what they've seen. But the excesses are in the searches for these things. The W prime search is basically looking at a four body resonance, EEJJ, and the masses that they see are 650 GeV for these two guys, for the leptoquarks in these decays, and 2.1 TeV for the EEJJ. And all of these are at about 2.5 sigma, roughly that order. I'll get more specific in a few slides. And notably, there's nothing analogous in the mu in the analogous mu or tau channels. No excesses there. In fact, there's a slight deficit in the mu mu jj. But in the tau channel, so the mu channel you expect to have roughly comparable sensitivity at this point. In the tau channel, the sensitivity is not quite there yet. So even if there were a decay to tau jj with the same, cross-section times branching fraction, you wouldn't expect to see it yet, just because taus are harder. So that's the topic that that's what we're going to begin with. And I just want to go through, in part one, it's going to be just an overview of the data, what we know about these things so far, and then I'll get into the model that I built on this. I should say that the model is based on some work I did with Yang Bai at Wisconsin. So, but we'll get to the model in a little bit. First, I want to talk about the leptoquark search. The two leptoquark searches, really, they were published in one CMS conf note the basic structure of their search is they apply some basic pre-selection, which is just selecting electrons and jets and missing energy, isolation, relatively hard events, a muon veto. So these events definitely don't have muons. And then they optimize the cuts by leptoquark mass in 50 GeV steps. So it's going to be a cut and count. And they just apply cuts for the EEJJ. They have this variable ST, which is basically the sum of the four particle, scalar sum of the four particle transverse momenta. There's a cut on MEE, which is basically to get past the Z threshold. So these are not Zs that you're looking at that are giving you the leptons. Some minimum invariant mass of the EJET. Some cut on the smaller of the two invariant masses of the E jets. Now, how do they pick this ME jet? So they basically pair up the E's and jets in the two possible ways, the two hardest jets and the two electrons. in the two possible ways, and they would look for the one, the combination that has the smallest mass difference. And they call that, then they take the smaller of those two masses, and that's what they mean by MEJ min. So once they've selected their correct pairing, they take the smaller of the two masses. So there's still, one of them's definitely gonna be smaller, and you pick that one for this cut. So, and the E nu JJ, the E nu JJ, there's again a cut on ST. Now they cut on missing transverse energy because that's getting from the neutrinos, neutrino, I should say. They have a cut on MEJ. Now you pick the EJ combination that has the smallest transverse mass difference with the missing energy jet combination. So
I'm not sure I understand. So for each, they define the LQ mass by the mass, the inverted mass of the jet and the electron?
They've defined that leptoquark mass as the mass of the electron and jet, but they don't actually look for a bump in MEJ.
No, I understand, but
yeah.
So the MEJ defines for them the beam that they're looking at, and they look at beams of 50 GeV steps?
No, the 50 GeV steps is they optimize the cut on these four variables to pick out a leptoquark of a mass of, you know, it, of a mass in each of these 50 GeV steps.
I don't understand. So for each beam, they optimize these cuts.
For each leptoquark mass, they optimize these cuts.
Right.
And they scale the No, the leptoquark mass is the theoretical input to the optimization. So they have a leptoquark model, and they optimize the cuts on these variables that have the largest sensitivity to a leptoquark of, say, 350 GeV.
So they run their analysis, let's say, 100 times for each mass of the
Yeah, they run it several times with different possible cuts, and they look for the one that has the greatest sensitivity to a leptoquark of that mass. So the cuts, as you go to higher and higher masses, for example, the cuts on these things are going to get harder and harder. So what actually happens is that the lower mass searches include all of the higher mass searches, because at each step you're going to higher and higher cuts.
That's what I was trying to understand,
Yeah, it makes it very difficult to calculate, say, a look elsewhere effect for this sort of thing. These are not uncorrelated bins. These are very, very correlated bins. They're, you know, 100% correlated,
sorry,
essentially.
So the reason why they do, for EEJJ, is it just because they find that putting this inclusive cut on is more effective because of the pairing ambiguity? Or I mean, think you could just do a two resonance search for that.
I think the issue is that, especially for larger masses, you're running out of statistics to look for a bump.
Okay.
So the excesses I'm going to be talking about are, you know, 10 to 20 events above background. So these are fairly small bumps. And, you know, they look pretty smushy. I mean, they're not like very sharp bumps. Now, that could just be that they don't have enough statistics yet, but it could also be that maybe it's not actually resonances that they're seeing. Because of the structure of these cuts, it's not specifically looking for, you know, a bump in the MEJ distribution. But I will show the MEJ distributions in a couple slides. Oh, and yeah, then just the fourth variable for the E nu JJ is the transverse mass of the E nu which I guess that just is to go above the W background, the W plus jets. So the I made this point already when I was addressing Itai's question, but these MLQ bins. You know, all the different MLQ, the searches for the leptoquarks of the different masses, the lower bins contain all higher bins, so they're strongly correlated. Okay, so that's the overall structure. So let's look at an example of this. So here's some plots related to the search in the EEJJ channel, where they optimize for a leptoquark mass of 650 GeV. And so this is after they apply the selection cuts, which are listed down here. So here's the ST, MEE, MEJ cut. Fairly hard cuts, because you're looking for 650 GeV. And you can see that at the end of the day, you're left with, you know, tens of events in these bins. And you can already see that there's some excesses over the background in the ST, just distributed fairly broadly over the ST distribution. Sorry?
What's the black?
What's the black? Yeah. That's showing up kind of funny, but I believe that's actually supposed to be the systematic uncertainty, the theoretical uncertainties on the background in systematics. So the error bars on the data points are the statistical errors, and then they have some error uncertainty on the background estimation. But it's showing up funny on this projector. It's not normally black like that.
Well, what is it on the computer?
It's sort of like hashed lines. This looks funny on my slide too. Okay, I don't know why it's showing up funny like that. Anyway. And then you can see here that there's these bins here around 500, 600 GeV that are high, above a little bit above the background. And that's the excess that we're actually concerned with in this case. It's a log plot, so these bumps are a little bit bigger than they appear. So this is the results that they get. So again, it's a cut and count experiment for each different MLQ, for the optimized cuts for each different MLQ. And I'm just showing you five of the most significant excesses. In particular, the largest excess is in this 650 GeV optimized cut that I showed you the plots for on the previous slide. So you're looking at data, 36 events with expected background of about 20 events. And that corresponds to a 2.4 sigma excess above the background. But that's just the most, the one with the largest excess. There's also, you know, excesses in the cuts for, you know, 500 GeV, 600 GeV. So it looks fairly broad in terms of the masses for which you see an excess. But these bins are highly correlated. These are not independent measurements of, you know, 2. Whatever sigma excesses. So we'll focus on this data, the most significant excess, and we have nice plots for it from the experimentalists.
Does that significance include a look-elsewhere effect?
It does not include a look-elsewhere effect. So that's an excellent question. How would you calculate a look-elsewhere effect in this case? And because of the correlation between the different bins, it seems a little tricky.
Well, they
can
still do a bunch of monochromes.
Yeah, they could. But this is a local. Yeah, no, unfortunately. Okay, so that was EEJJ. Let's talk a little bit about ENUJJ. Just to show you similar sort of plots of the distributions that you get after applying their cuts optimized for 650 GeV leptoquark. And again, you see sort of a broad excess over a much smaller background in this case. In particular, the MEJ distribution is quite broad, maybe broader than you'd expect from sort of a 650 GeV resonance. But this is still actually one of the most significant bins, as you'll see on the next slide. The background's smaller because, you're looking at quite a bit harder cuts in this case.
What's the jet veto?
The jet veto?
What is that?
There's no jet veto. It's inclusive. They just take the two hardest jets, I believe, yeah. So there could be other jets in these events. Okay. So that's a similar sort of thing. The most significant excesses in the bins, again, it's fairly highly concentrated in 650 GeV, despite that sort of broadness of the that you saw in the previous slide. The highest, largest excess is in the 650 GeV bin with 18 events, an expected background of 7.5 events. So that's a 2.6 sigma excess. So getting, you know, larger. And the so while these bins are all correlated with each other, the ENU JJ and EE JJ probably have fairly small correlations, just because, I mean, here you're looking for one electron, there you're looking for two electrons. Somehow you have to lose the electron. So it seems like they're reasonably uncorrelated. Those two, this search and the EEJJ search, and they happen to fall at exactly the same mass, which is also sort of. If it was a signal? If it wasn't a signal, then I was just assuming if it was not a signal, maybe it's a statistical fluctuation. But that seems.
That seems less likely. But if there is some. So, for example, like electron misidentification.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because then this one will have to be a lot weaker than the other.
Yeah, but there could be models where one of the electrons gets lost due to isolation and things like that. I think it's with the data I'm going to show you about the 2.1 TeV resonance. I think it's fairly hard to come up with a consistent picture where that's the case. Where you somehow where you're somehow losing the electron in these events, an electron in these events, and you get exactly the same sort of excess at 650 GeV. I think, but you know, there's been a lot of interest in sort of interpretations where there are more jets or things like that, and then it's possible that you're losing electrons to get some things like this.
You know what the typical energy of the jets is?
The typical energy of the jets. Well, you can get a typical idea of the typical energy in these events from plots like this, where these are quite hard objects, because you can look at the ST distribution. That's telling you something about the total scalar sum PT. But the individual jets, I don't have any information. Like, they don't plot the leading jet PT or things like that. They're vetoing additional leptons. They demand exactly one lepton in these events and exactly two in the EEJJ. Sorry? I believe it's 20 GeV. Yeah. Yeah, I'd have to double check, but I believe it's 20 GeV. Okay, so we have some excesses. We can just, for reference, take a look at Brazil plots of these things, and you can see this is the largest, the most significant excess is this bump right over here for the EEJJ channel, and this bump right over here for the ENUJJ channel, corresponding to pretty much the same location in these plots, but also pretty much the same sigma times branching fraction. You know, very similar sigma times branching fraction, which is also fairly, you know, that's kind of a neat little coincidence that comes up out of these events. So we'll come back to that in a little bit. That's just to show you that's what we've seen. Sorry, the shaded region is what they claim to have excluded for 5 inverse femtobarns and 19.6 inverse femtobarns, but that's for assuming 100% branching fraction. So this blue line is what would happen if there was 100% branching fraction in each of these channels. And you can see this excess is still well below that. So in particular, one thing we're going to come back to is the fact that the branching fractions of these two channels, EJ and NuJ, they can't add up to one. So there has to be some other branching fraction for these leptoquarks, if it's leptoquarks. And then, so that was Brazil plots in numbers. Just to give you a rough idea of the acceptance, signal acceptance in these two cases, you're looking at signal times branching fractions of order 1.5 to 2 femtobarns. Very comparable in the two cases. This is just assuming a standard leptoquark model. The data, the excess is, you know, 10 to 15 events or so above the background. So that's just to give you a sense of the numbers going into this. Okay. So that's the leptoquark search. Now let me switch gears a little bit and talk about the W prime search. So the structure of the search is a little bit different. So it's really, they're applying some basic pre-selection. So again, fairly similar cuts to what the leptoquark search was applying for their pre-selection. But then they're doing a multi-bin CLS on that MEEJJ distribution to determine whether, you know, to set their limits. So it's not really a cut and count. It's really a binned likelihood analysis. And they have slightly different selection requirements in doing this analysis. So, but they're not very different. So similar sorts of things. So you'd expect probably quite a bit of overlap in terms of the data from this search and from the EEJJ leptoquark search. And then they do their analysis, and what they find is, okay, here's the MEEJJ distribution, and you can see it tracks the background quite well. And then there's this bin over here where you have quite a large excess above the background, and then this bin is just mildly high, but not really in excess. They plot these bins in a slightly weird way. So these larger bins, they're actually looking at the number of events per 0.2 TeV. So that's summing up the two different bins, like averaging the two different bins that would go into this larger bin over here, and then averaging a whole bunch of bins into what's going into that. So we don't actually have like the full shape of this distribution. And then you can do, again, a Brazil plot, and you can see quite a large, broad excess around 2 to 2.5 TeV for W prime going to EEJJ in terms. But the most significant excess is somewhere around 2.1 TeV. So this was an SU2 cross SU2 type model, SU2 left cross SU2 right. And then you had some right-handed neutrinos. So you have W prime going to right-handed neutrino and the lepton. And then the right-handed neutrino decays to a lepton and an off-shell W prime, which goes to jet-jet. So you get an EEJJ final state, or they also do the analogous search for muons and don't see anything. Yeah, so that it was motivated by models like that. And then in numbers, just counting up events in the 1.8 TeV to 2.2 TeV bins, there's the data, there's 14 events with an expected background of about 4 events, and the significance of this excess is about 2.8 sigma. The acceptance here is quite high for signal events, about 60%. Sigma times branching fraction, again, in this one femtobarn region after taking into account the acceptance. So this, you know, if you see something like this in EEJJ and you saw something like the leptoquarks in EEJJ, it sort of motivates the idea that they're correlated. I mean, it's the same final state, similar cross sections. So So we'll try to build a model that encapsulates these three excesses. So just to recap what we've seen about the data, assuming that all the results that I presented here hold steady, which is a fairly big assumption, then we would have to have two new states to explain this, an EEJJ resonance at 2.1 TeV with sigma times branching fraction of about a femtobarn, and an EJ nu J resonance at 650 GeV with sigma times branching fraction of about 1.5 femtobarns. There's a fairly suggestive EJ to nu J branching fraction ratio that's 1:1 roughly. But the branching fractions to these two channels do not add up to 1. They're add up to about 0.2. That's what the data seems to be suggesting, and that's much, much less than 1. So there has to be some other branching fractions for whatever this resonance is, if this is the right explanation for this, for these three excesses. And I should point out that the QCD-produced 650 GeV leptoquark has a cross-section of 13.2 femtobarns. So you really have to have quite a large, that's just indicating how small the branching fraction to these two channels has to be, because they're both at about a femtobarn. Okay, so that's... That is unavoidable if it's a leptoquark, because leptoquark has to carry color. QCD production is 13.2 femtobarns. Simple as that.
You want one femtobarn. So it's borderline, no?
Sorry? With a branching fraction of 10%, that's what you want, is a branching fraction of about 10%. But that means there has to be other branching fractions for these particles. And I'm going to come back to that at the end. Okay, so that's the data. We know what we do next. We chase the ambulance and try to find a model that can do this. Sorry?
Nice.
Yeah, I think those are pixelated red polka dots. Okay, that's what we're going to do next. And the model that I'm going to put forward here is the a Coleron plus leptoquark model. There have been a few other papers that have come out looking into this excess since we published. A couple looking at W prime type models that seem to not be able to fit the E nu JJ data very well. One paper looking at Adam Martin and Bogdan Dobrescu looking at cases where you have extra jets in these events. So you have a 2.5 TeV resonance or so decaying to final states with 4 jets, and then kinematics just magically gives you this 2 TeV bump in the EEJJ. Yeah, I'm going to discuss exactly what I mean by a Coleron in this case, but it's basically going to be a massive SU3 octet. Yeah. A vector SU3 octet. So 2.1 TeV leptoquarks, which I'm going to denote by S1 at about 550 to 650 GeV. I'm going to take these two mass points as my two benchmarks. They both work quite well. There's both resonant Coleron production and QCD production contribute to this. And actually,
you want the S1 to be a scalar?
You want the S1 to be a scalar, or I'm going to take it to be a scalar. So what the pro of the nice part about this model, there's few moving parts and it fits the data quite well. The con ? Is that the leptoquark still has to have these other decay modes. And the question is, what are those decay modes? And I'll come back to that question towards the end. OK, so just to explain in a little bit more detail what this model actually is. So at high energy, we start with an SU3 2 cross SU3 1 with two, they each have gauge bosons, a G2 and a G1. And you couple the S1 to this site, and the quark Steinwald quarks to this site of the SU3. And then once you break, at low energies, you break the SU3 down to an SU3 color and the broken, which is unbroken, and an SU3H, which is broken. And the G prime is the combination of G1 and G2 that goes under this guy. G is the standard gluon, which is some combination of G1 and G2 with some mixing angle theta. Then you so the gluon has to couple with a strength GS, things that coupled to site one have to couple things that are coupled to SU3C have to have coupling GS. So anything that has color has coupling GS, but things that couple to SU3H, so that's their coupling depends on which site they were at on the previous slide. So whether you're on site two or site one, you get a different coupling to this G prime. And so that that gives you sort of a free parameter, this tan theta, to sort of dial the relative coupling to the leptoquark versus the standard model quarks. And so you get some ratio for the couplings of S1, of the Steinwald quarks to S1. No, not to gluons, but to this G prime, to the coloron. Yeah. It gives you a free parameter to dial there. And one thing I should mention is that you could have a more complicated model than this, where you have more than two sites. But I just presented the two sites here because that's what I can easily show you on a slide like this. But we're going to consider the case where you have more than one site, and then there's an extra parameter coefficient to that's basically a fudge factor that can adjust the couplings further, the couplings to the coloron further. Okay, so let's talk about coloron production and decay then. So this is just the branching fractions to jets, to top quark. Again, these guys get a factor of 10 theta. The leptoquark production gets a factor of GS1 here, which is squared, which is basically this extra factor of the mixing angle times some fudge factor that you can possibly have in there. So you can dial the relative size of this branching fraction. And the production, just to give you an idea, of the coloron is quite large. You get about a picobarn in terms of cross section, but we're going to take tan theta generally to be fairly small in the 0.2 to 0.2-ish range. So this is just to show you the production times branching into leptoquarks or to jets. So the red lines are into leptoquarks in two different benchmark models, and the jet cross sections are shown in blue. And you can see that at these low, smallish tan thetas, you get that you're getting things that are closer to tens of femtobarns. And then multiplying that by the branching fraction of the leptoquarks into leptons, you can get exactly the right cross section to explain the excesses that we've seen. Okay, so that's coloron production decay. Yeah, just to highlight again, you have this fudge factor to dial the relative branching fractions of that, and that's going into this plot. Okay, so that was the coloron. Let's talk a little bit about the leptoquark. We're going to take it to be a fundamental of SU3, or actually an anti-fundamental. So it's basically, charges are basically like a squark, like a right-handed squark. So then you can write down some Yukawa interaction that's right over here. That's the coupling that we're gonna use to generate the branching fraction into leptons and quarks. And we're gonna take the this coupling to be coupled only to first generation quarks and leptons. So you have to assume some sort of flavor structure to get this, and we're gonna leave that, you know, we're gonna wave our, do a little bit of hand waving and just say that, you know, you can implement some sort of MFP-like model to generate just the first generation coupling. Because if you generate the other generation couplings, first of all, you risk lepton flavor violation, but also they haven't seen this thing in muons. Because of the SU2, these are left-handed quark doublets and and left-handed lepton doublets, you actually get branching fraction to EJ and nuJ to be the same by default. But you can always add an extra interaction to right-handed quarks and leptons to break this equality if the data seems to be pushing you in that direction. So we're gonna take this sort of broad picture of a model and simplify it down to the three phenomenologically relevant parameters, which is the branching fraction to EJ, branching fraction to nuJ of the leptoquark, and the production times branching fraction into the leptoquarks via coloron. So these are the three free parameters that we're going to take. And then we can just fit the data to these three parameters. We have three data sets, three parameters. You can actually just go ahead and solve. And that's what we'll do. But first, I just wanted to show you a little bit about the signal acceptance that we get from Monte Carlo studies of these different leptoquarks. And this is sort of what we're using to parameterize our fit. So, and it also should give you a sense of which one of these two production modes is sort of dominating is dominating the contribution to each of these searches. So here's the three different searches that we have, and here's our two different mass benchmarks for the leptoquark. So for the leptoquark EEJJ, you have fairly high acceptance for all of these, for both different types of models and for either benchmark. And I should say this leptoquark EEJJ and leptoquark nu EJJ are both looking at in the 650 GeV optimized bin, even though we're talking about 550 GeV leptoquark here. But then when you go to nu EJJ, you find that you have a much lower acceptance for the 550 GeV case than for the 650 GeV case, because the cuts are just getting harder much faster for the in the enu JJ search. In the W prime search, what you can find is that the QCD is a very small contribution to each of these. To the data that they would be seeing in these searches. So it's dominated by coloron production, as you'd expect, since the excess is all around 2.1 TeV, and you get very few QCD boost colorons that happen to have an invariant mass that high. Okay, so now that we've done that, we can go ahead and fit to the data. So we have three excesses. The counts in the 650 GeV bin and the two leptoquark searches, and the counts in this 1.8 TeV to 2.2 TeV bin and MEEJJ for the W prime search. And we're just basically going to fit to the number of the excess counts in each of those bins with our three parameters, the two branching fractions and the cross section to produce leptoquarks via colorons. And we're going to fix the coloron mass to be 2.1 TeV, and the S1, the leptoquark mass to be either 550 GeV or 650 GeV. Those are two benchmarks. And then you can just solve. and figure out what cross-section you would need to fit the data. And these are the results that we get. So in the 550 GeV case, what's neat is that you get the two branching fractions are seem to be quite close to equal just by default. But you have a fairly large color on production, and you have a fairly large color on production. So these branching fractions are a little bit smaller. In the 650 GeV case, you seem to get a ratio that's roughly 2-1, which may be indicating, say, that the coupling to right-handed quark lepton is about the same as the coupling to left-handed quark lepton, or something like that. So, but they're still the branching fractions are still roughly in the ballpark. And let's not forget, this is based on 10 events in each of these things. So take it with a little bit of a grain of salt. As more data comes along, you know, if the sex set stays, then you'll get better and better fits. Okay, so that's that. So let's see how well these fits do and plot some of the data again. So this is going back to some plots I showed you earlier, but now including our two fits for our two benchmark models, our 550 GeV benchmark and our 650 GeV benchmark in green. The black dots are the data. The blue was the background just taken directly from the experimental papers. So, and then our fits are shown in green and in red. And you can see they do a reasonably good job of fitting this data. There's still, you know, quite a bit of fuzz in there. And again, these are low statistics. So this is one event down here. So you don't really expect to see necessarily that much going on down here. Okay, then that was for EEJJ, for ENUJJ. Again, the data are quite a bit more sprawled out like this, but still you do a decent job of fitting the data in this search just by using this simple Coloron plus leptoquark model. And last but not least, there's this plot of the MEEJJ distribution from the W prime search. And here you can fit, you know, all the excess is really dominated by this one bin, so you get an excellent fit for, it's really easy to fit one bin, basically, is what that plot says. So that's how our model does. So then this is just showing the three of them together now. So EEJJ, ENUJJ, and EEJJ W prime resonance. Reasonably good fit from a very simple model. Okay, but again, not very many statistics for doing a fit. Okay, so the next step, I'm going to look into my crystal ball and tell you what I predict based on this model, or any similar sorts of models. Any model that's going to explain these excesses is going to be, you know, that they're going to have some fairly common features. And I want to go into those a little bit. So prediction zero is Atlas just see all three of these excesses. That's the most obvious one. Everything I've shown you is CMS data. Atlas has yet to weigh in. All you can find is a leptoquark search, first generation leptoquark search. So this is the analogous one to the leptoquark searches for EEJJ and ENUJJ from Atlas, but with 7 TeV of data, one inverse femtobarn. That's the most up-to-date that we have. So, you know, when they publish a search on the 8 TeV data at, you know, 20 inverse femtobarns, then we'll talk. They really shouldn't have sensitivity yet.
Otherwise, it looks like they are
screwing the area. But this is for assuming 100% branching fraction, the blue line. So that's comparable. The CMS plots also had a comparable blue line that was assuming 100% branching fraction. Of course, if it was 100, it can't be 100% branching fraction. That's not a good fit to the data. That's deeply, deeply ruled out. Yeah. Yeah. And there's no search for the right-handed W, this 2.1 TeV thing. Just doesn't exist at all. Okay, so that's prediction zero. Prediction one, what's that? Okay, I don't know what that was, but here's prediction one. Prediction one is that, well, if you have a 2.1 TeV resonance decaying to E nu JJ, you should be able to see that. And you can look at the transverse mass of the E nu JJ combination, and this is just to show you the signal. Of course, you will also have to do a full analysis of the background, but just to show you, give you an idea, you would get an edge that you sort of expect from these MT distributions when you have a missing particle in the final state. So they should be able to see this. CMS or Atlas should be able to see this. So that's prediction one. Prediction two, you have the new JJ final state. So you should be able to get jets plus MET. Unfortunately, the sigma times branching fraction is quite a bit below what they have sensitivity to right now. It's about a factor of 20 below what CMS or Atlas can do at the moment. But that's assuming just that a signal topology that looks like the QCD produced version. But if you're looking at the resonant produced new JJ, you would expect quite a bit more missing energy than the QCD produced case, which is good for us. It means it's easier to see these events. And you'd see more of this missing energy just because it's coming from a higher center of mass energy. So everything coming out of those decays is harder. So you should see more MET than the QCD produced case, and you should have better sensitivity, but that's also awaits further study. Prediction three, you should see DiJet and TT bar resonances at 2.1 TeV. Particularly, DiJet is very well motivated since you're producing a 2.1 TeV resonance, presumably from two quarks or two gluons. You should expect to see it decay back to two quarks or two gluons with some branching fraction. And at least in the Kalaron models that that I'm discussing, you expect sigma times branching to be in the order of 1 to 20 femtobarns, and the limit right now is at about 45-ish femtobarns. That's what this black line is, the solid black line is over here. And so we turn on at 13 dB, we should see it pretty quickly. So a few other notes about these about this. Searches for this. Searches are not optimized for this topology, this Kalaron-produced topology. And so optimizing for that could help quite a bit. There is no information, at least publicly, about this. There's any sub-resonances in the W prime search. They didn't publish the distribution of EJJ or something like that, which would tell you something about whether there's some intermediate on-shell resonance in those decays. So it'd be very nice to see some of that data. And again, just to emphasize the fact that through this resonant production, you get harder events. You get larger ST, more missing energy, harder jets, all of the above. And again, all this picture seems consistent with the two branching fraction to EJ and NuJ being roughly the same or equal in the SU2, if it's just SU2 left. Okay, so now to address the elephant in the room, other decays of the leptoquark. So other decays have to be quite big. NuJ and EJ are hiding in the corners, but there's something there that's the dominant decay. And the question is, what is that? So what could that possibly be? MuJ? Nah, they don't see it. So can't be decays to MuJ. Could it be decays to TauJ? It's a bizarre flavor structure, but it's not ruled out experimentally, so I'll give it a maybe. Now, the limits on tau j are like a factor of 10 or so worse than the limits on EJ or mu j.
Okay, so
Yeah, so it's not quite ruled out, but they should start to see it fairly soon, you're right. If this is making up all the remaining branching fraction. Okay. Jet. No, you can't do that. So in principle, you could have an epsilon contraction of the leptoquark with two quarks, and get, you know, leptoquark to two quarks. But then you'd induce proton decay, unless the coupling is so small that you get displaced vertices and you start to fail quality cuts and things like that. So you can't really do it to jet. One fun one that I like is the idea of having the leptoquark decay to a jet and two lepton number charged dark matter particles. So that seems to work if the C is heavyish, so that it doesn't appear in the searches for E nu JJ. So you have to suppress the MET somehow. So there has to be some degree of degeneracy between the sum of the two masses, these two guys, and the leptoquark mass. The masses have to add up to close to 650 GeV or 550 GeV. But it doesn't have to be that close. We know that you start to lose events quite quickly as you increase the mass of the dark matter coming out of these things. Okay. And in any case, no matter what, the other decay channels are going to have to involve jets with maybe leptons and or MET. There's really not much else you can think of coming in to save the day in terms of the branching fractions. So in the future, future directions. So we have all these correlated high energy signatures to study. You know, all the dijet resonances and your new JJ channels and things like that. So that's something to look into. There's looking into single production and low energy probes, but we sort of left the coupling, this Yukawa coupling in front of the leptoquark LQ vertex. That was sort of arbitrary in this model. As long as it's not so small that you get, you know, start to fail jet quality cuts, it can pretty much be anything between that and whatever the bounds are on single production and low energy probes and things like that. So you can dial that coupling down and save yourself arbitrarily, essentially, from these probes. Then you have this multi-resonance structure that you can use to sort of enhance your signal sensitivity, and so that's you know, there's way more optimization that can be done for these searches. And then there's maybe so I presented to you one possible topology where you have a Coulron decaying to leptoquarks decaying to EJ and nuJ. But there's other ways in which these resonances could combine to give you an EEJJ resonance. And it's worth exploring if any of these other ones have simple models like this. But it seems like the model building does get a bit trickier in those cases. Okay, so that's... So just to elaborate a little bit on these other topologies, here's a plot just showing you... what would happen if you had our 2.1 TeV benchmark for the Coulron production versus a W prime like thing with a right hand decaying to right handed neutrino, so exactly what they were actually looking for in the CMS sort of search. And then what I'm doing, instead of just showing you EEJJ like they plot, I'm showing you some other distribution for the signal and for the data points. And this other distribution is the MEJ average in the EEJ distribution. So this is, you take the combination with the smallest MEJ difference between the EJ pairs, and you plot the average MEJ. And you can see that both the Coulron and the W prime seem to be reasonably good fits for this. But the issue with a plot like this you know, you could say, okay, so why not W prime? It's still hard in the W prime models to get the neutrinos, to get E nu JJ. So I don't have a very good mechanism for doing that. Okay, so to conclude, CMS is seeing excesses in EEJJ and ENUJJ at about 2.5 sigma, 2.4 to 2.8 sigma. Calorons and leptoquarks are well-motivated extensions of the star models that can have interesting correlated signatures and can fit this data quite well. And I think this is either a development of the first high-energy BSM signature that we're seeing right now, or maybe more likely it's just, you know, it'll go away, but it's a wake-up call to think about these sort of resonant cascades of resonances, which, you know, can give you some interesting signatures that we're not really optimized to look for at this point. Hopefully this is, it's the first case, but at worst, you know, we learned something about new signatures that we weren't optimized for before. Thanks.